Hi, this is Brennan Davis from Bedrock Games and the Bedrock Blog, and this is a late night discussion. I want to talk about living adventures. I had a session recently where something happened where I realized it would be I think a good example of what it means to have a living adventure in terms of how I use that language. And I realize I use the language of things like sandbox and stuff a little different than other people do. So, and I've described what I mean by living adventure on the blog, so I won't repeat it here, except to say that it's about having very active NPCs on the board. It's treating NPCs almost like they're PCs. And so I think where you can really see the difference between how a living adventure is run and how one that isn't is run, and this is like a very, how can I put it? This is like a very simple example. It's probably overly simplistic. But in an adventure where that's not the case, encounters will either tend to be planned or random. And by planned, I mean you plan the encounter not based around what your NPCs are doing, but based on what encounter you want to have happen on the road. And so in a recent campaign, or a recent session of my campaign, the players were traveling and they had incurred the anger of a woman named Lady Yang. And Lady Yang, I decided, was going to actively hire assassins, but she was going to go through an intermediary. So she went through a woman named Madame Hamaya, who's kind of like runs a brothel. She's, you know, a madam basically. And, but her real function is to, procure assassins. And so the party, is traveling in the Banyan region, and Madame Hamaya, manages to hire two assassins. So I generate the assassins randomly. I might, in the future, I've decided when NPCs hire assassins, I might actually create a table to make it happen. But either way, I figured Madame Hamaya, she knows how to recruit people. And so she recruited, I decided, two Chi rank 5 assassins. I generated them randomly in the app, and then I didn't look at them again. I just looked them right before the session to come up with personalities. But I didn't even really pay close attention to like their stats and things like that. I wanted to be surprised because when they came into play, I didn't want to load the situation at all around how challenging they would be for the party. I just wanted to have them try to track and attack the party and then see what happened. But the way that this is sort of a living scenario is Lady Yang is actively moving pieces by, you know, seeking out somebody to recruit assassins. Lady Yang. Madame Hamaya is doing the same. And then the assassins are active players on the board. And so they're, specifically seeking the players, and they're going to try to assassinate them. So it's not a random encounter. It's not a, it's not really a planned encounter either. It's what in the Feast of Goblins book was called a Wandering Major encounter. And it's basically an NPC who is doing the sort of thing you would expect a PC to do in a game. You know, the PCs are going to try and get the drop on the Duke, that kind of a thing. And so that's the sort of thing that you're looking for. Now, on top of that, this was a little bit more complicated because in addition to, and I apologize for my noodling, I figured because it's a late night podcast, I would do it with the guitar in my hand. But in addition to the whole thing with the two assassins, the players had an interaction with the Mystic Sword Sect, who were very impressed with the party because one of their members was a disciple of Jade Swallow, who they greatly admired. And so, again, this was another situation where playing Lady Whiteblade very actively, I realized that if she knew that her disciples had met on the road the disciples of Jade Swallow, she would want to make sure that while they're in the Banyan region that they were protected. So she sent people to follow them And they, what I did was I had the players make detect rolls. I was secretly making detect rolls for them to see if they noticed. And their orders were to not do anything, you know, unless absolutely necessary. And so that when these assassins chose to attack them, they initially let the assassins make their attacks just to see what was going to happen because they didn't want to blow their cover. But once things got out of hand, they stepped in. And you can look at the session log on the blog, and that'll you know, you'll see what the scenario was. But again, that's these are things that can happen from random encounters. They can happen from planned encounters, but they're different in how they come about. And they come about more in the way that things players do are things that NPCs do in a living adventure. And that's really what it comes down to. When I'm running a sandbox like that, I don't always run sandboxes, but when I run sandbox, particularly for, you know, something like Wandering Heroes of Obligate, the thing that I'm trying to achieve and the thing that I'm trying to get away from is I want to be surprised by outcomes as much as the players are. I don't want anybody to be married to something that needs to happen. I don't want players thinking, oh, we need to confront a big bad now, or we need to have this climactic battle, or we need to go and, you know, get some kind of redemption, or this needs to happen. I want everybody to be surprised by stuff. I don't want it to feel like I'm handing them my notes, and I don't want to feel like I'm getting their notes either. I view a good sandbox as an act of discovery for both parties, and kind of a chemical reaction between the player characters, the NPCs, and all of these other moving parts and elements. If you are interested in the scenario I described, you can check out the blog. It's the 9th session of the Paths from Nowhere campaign. I might come back on here and talk about this a little bit again too, because I've been trying to clarify for people what I mean when I talk about these things. I try to be clear, but I think because a lot of these terms have kind of a preloaded meaning, sometimes my meaning gets a little bit confused. So the basic concept here is the idea of the living adventure, which for me was sort of how I got away from railroading. And my first encounter with the living adventure was in the Feast of Goblins book. And it wasn't like I saw the living adventure idea and then that instantly, remedied the problem of railroads and games for me, because I was GMing in the era of the 90s where there was a lot of railroads. I think people that cut their teeth in the era that I did kind of had a similar trajectory where there was a lot of heavy-handed railroading, and then by the 2000s it was everything was a different kind of railroading. I don't want to get too deep into it on this podcast, but it was sort of like we went from one type of railroading to another, and by that point I was just very tired of it. And I had developed in my Ravenloft games less linear approaches, less railroady approaches. But it took a while for me to like really find a way to just completely break away from that problem. So for me, the living adventure is an important component of how I see a sandbox working. And I think the other thing about the living adventure is it really helps retain a lot of the dramatic elements that I like, but without being railroady or heavy-handed about it. It's more about how you have these characters in the world responding to the player characters. And drama, I think, really comes out of conflict between characters anyway, so, you know, that just kind of naturally arises. But it's a naturalistic kind of drama. It's not like a... it doesn't feel artificial to me. That's the topic for today. And again, late night late night podcast, so these are meandering. And again, I mentioned this in the last podcast. If I'm not being clear when I speak, I apologize. That's been happening, and so I'm trying to enunciate clearly, but it's, you know, my enunciation has not been good lately. In terms of things coming up, Strange Tales of New England is I mean, again, it's, I always say this, and I say it for like 6 months while I'm sort of doing final touches on stuff, because I always have designer disease with these things. But Strange Tales of New England is pretty much done. I really just have to like buckle down and like do the little revisions that I want to do. But I could tomorrow just hand to Adam and get edits done. But I have some revisions I want to do, and I'm kind of slow about it. And I also have, as always, the Sons of Lady 87 book is out. It's been out for about, I think, a year now, maybe longer. But I think it's a really good example of the Ogre Gate campaigns and how they operate. And something that I'm also trying to encourage people to do is check out Strange Tales of Songling. I know that came out a while ago, but it came out like literally when the pandemic started, and I didn't really ever get it. I never quite got the chance to promote it the way I would normally promote a game. And so I think it's one of our stronger games, so I'm trying to encourage people to check it out. And I noticed some people downloaded the Banshee Tree adventure this month. Normally there's like, you know, a handful of them, but there was quite a few this month, so I don't know what triggered that. But if you downloaded the Beneath the Banshee Tree adventure for Sartorius, thank you. For those who don't know what it is, you can go check it out. It's a pay what you want adventure, so you can get it for free. And it's kind of like a mystery adventure for the Sartorius game. But I have a feeling that you could probably adapt it to other systems and stuff. Sartorius is kind of a game where players have almost like godlike powers. They're sort of like spellcasters, but their spells are a product of having a divine spark in their soul, and they can grow in power and divinity as the game goes on. And that's actually where the Wandering Heroes of Ogre Gate system was born, really, is from the Sartorius system. So anyways, I will let you go, and until next time, I will talk to you later.